whiteness of darkness, the stories told by firelight, the long nights, the food fights, a summer made of memories at camp, candy. The moonlight, the sunshine, the rainy days and wet.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to your favorite G.I. Joe podcast show. This episode features 100% less TV's Gina Ippolito and 100% more Frankie G. We will get into that in just a moment, though. This is Knowing is Half the Podcast, and I am Ray Stakanis.
I'm Robert Clark Chan.
And I'm Frankie G, baby.
There we go. See, right on cue. We didn't even have to prompt you. Now, Frankie G, for the people at home who would like to know more based on that alone, is the host, creator, etc. of the weekly show Wiz World Live, currently streaming and doing the Renaissance circuit. Frankie, tell us more.
Thank you. Yeah, we're called Wiz World Live. We started as a backup fill-in show at Hollywood's Pack Theater. And then during the pandemic, we went online and we found a national and even sometimes international audience. According to the stats, some folks in Germany love the show. They never speak up, but they seem to watch it. And one of our goals before COVID was to move to the Ren Faire circuit. And so now we are Earth's most magical talk show, Earth's best and only wizard-based talk show that you can find online at a Renaissance fair near you. It's mostly improv. It's tons of fun. We do some stuff on Twitch that no one else is doing. Like, we've done a live bank heist. We turned Jeff Bezos into a writer one time and then blew him up with the help of the ghost of Joan Rivers and Johnny Carson. So it's a fun show.
You are living the dream.
Yeah, man.
Truly what we all come to Los Angeles for.
If you're not coming to Los Angeles to do streaming wizard shows, yeah. I don't know why you would even
what
come
are
here.
You doing? Yeah. Yeah.
Well, today we're not watching G.I. Joe, as you could probably tell, because Gina would murder everyone involved and our families if we tried to do an episode of G.I. Joe without her. So instead, we're doing a show called Camp Candy. And I can't believe in the 7 years of this show, we've never done Camp Candy before. Honestly, I watched this show when I was a kid. It was a Saturday morning cartoon. Really, the quick version, Saturday morning cartoon. I want to say this is either late 80s or early 90s, featuring John Candy, star of Spaceballs, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, Uncle Buck, so much more. And he is a camp counselor who's telling stories about his camp as an unreliable narrator, thus creating hilarious Toon Force action. It's a very low-impact show, I would say. And I'm curious how everybody else feels about it. Frankie, starting with you, what is your relationship with Camp Candy? What made you want to do this show?
Well, so I was a little too young to catch it first run, but I was born in 86. So
jeez, brag much? Jeez.
Well, I mean, I'm not that young anymore. But it started in 89, but I started to catch it in reruns. And then it was on, I think, Cartoon Network and Boomerang like a little bit later.
Yeah, so, and it was on Fox Family Cable until 2001.
So
it lasted a while.
Yeah, and I think it's because it's a very, very charming show. It's got John Candy. He's the anchor. It has his actual kids in the cast.
Oh, no kidding.
It's got, like, incredible. It's got E.G. Daily. It's got Cree Summer. Like, it's got folks that would become animation superstars right after this show, and it's just nice, even the ones that we watched today were just very bizarre ones. The titles I feel like did not live up to themselves exactly. Glasnost Menagerie has so much going for it, and they just
great name. I was like, that's one of the top 10 best episode names we've seen on this show.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you know what?
Glasnost Menagerie.
It turns out that's also the name of a night court.
Oh, is that right?
Wow.
And in the Night Court episode, the guest star Yakov Smirnoff has a visa problem.
Well, here we go. Yes. You could be making that up right now and I would believe you. Let me just put it that way.
I was a diehard Night Court fan growing up, and I've watched a couple recently. They do not hold up, and makes me sad.
I just remember John Larroquette is a sex fiend who's always trying to bag Marky Post.
Yep.
And then I remember one episode, I don't know if he like accidentally saves her life or something, but she like owes him. So she's like, finally, I'll sleep with you. I'll never forget this because I was a young, what are you, like middle school aged, looking for any horny thing I could find on TV. And I just remember like they were right.
Night Court.
Well, you have a horny character. That's as adjacent as I could get at this time.
Is there anything hornier to a teenage boy than a judge doing magic? I would suggest
that's just it. That's what I learned through this show is as much as I was seeking out the horny stuff, what I really wanted was Harry Anderson's magic. That was really it.
Of course, the cultural experience of learning about Yugoslavia via Data as an Appalachian yokel.
Thank you. Yeah.
Oh, no. Yeah. Doug and Wendy Wheeler.
Yeah, well, here's the deal. To put a cap on it, they were going to do it, and then he realizes he's doing it for the wrong reasons. And he's using her against her will at the end of the day. Yeah. And so he decides it's distasteful and decides not to go through with it.
Leftist Night Court. Jeez.
When did they go?
They went woke. Are they around anymore? I don't think so. Broke, nerds. Broke. You can find my Night Court breakdown in my 4-hour podcast. MR Ray talks Night Court.
MR Ray.
They are rebooting Night Court, and I am very interested. And then also like it sounds terrible. Like it's the daughter of Harry Anderson or something like that. You know, daughter of the judge. Harry.
So in this universe, you inherit your judgeship.
Yes, yes, that's how that works.
Yes.
Well, it's just like real life. Then that's a little too real for me. And look, if it's not Kaley Cuoco playing that role, I'm just not interested.
It's Melissa Rauch. Okay.
Has she done anything?
And John Larroquette is she was on Big Bang Theory. That was her like breakout.
Well, I was halfway correct.
She's also Harley Quinn, and she's very good at that.
What? No, Kaley Cuoco is Harley Quinn.
In one of the movies. Batman and Harley Quinn.
Oh, gotcha. Jesus, that's weird that there are two Big Bang Theory actors who play Harley Quinn in different iterations of animated.
It's not as weird as you think, Robert Clark Chan. Remember, there's a Who Would Win episode a couple of weeks ago where we found out that not one but two Game of Thrones actresses played Sarah Connor in different properties. So yeah. Hollywood's just like that.
I think that's because there's only like 5 casting directors.
Yeah, I wish I knew one of them.
I'm the same.
Let me put it out there. If you're one of those 5, hit me up. At Almighty Ray on Twitter. I'd love to slide into your DMs.
I'm going to say this.
Is that what that means?
Absolutely not. I was going to let it go because I didn't, but yeah, sure. Go ahead and fuck a
I understand. I understand the net.
The net is, in fact, something different from how it was presented in the Sarah Bullock thriller classic.
It's weird how it's diverged from there.
Now, listen, the internet is exactly like the movie Hackers with Angelina Jolie and TV Sherlock.
TV Sherlock.
Wait, hold on.
Johnny Lee Miller.
Oh, okay. I was like, Benedict Cumberbatch? He wasn't even around. Okay.
TV's Elementary Sherlock.
You would say TV Sherlock instead of fucking his role in Trainspotting?
I would 100% say that because I saw Trainspotting maybe 30 years ago, but I've seen Elementary much more soon.
Much more soon.
I've seen every episode of Elementary, my dear Clark Chan.
Camp Candy.
Camp Candy.
It's been on our list for a long time because for a little while there, we went like on a run through like these celebrity cartoons that popped up in the 90s.
Oh, yeah.
And some of them were real bad. I'm going to give credit to this one because it actually has the voice of John Candy in it, which is solid. It's also by Deke, which is not so great.
Not our favorite.
Really?
But also, like, basically, I watched the thing and I was like, it's kind of the opposite of this other show we watched recently, The Wacky Adventures of Ronald McDonald, in that, like, there's a bunch of parts that all kind of a bunch of good parts. They don't quite cohere, but I'm not mad at it. I just like, hey, this is okay. Like, this looks like it's for children, and the jokes that aren't landing, I'm like, yeah, if I were 6, I'd fucking love this. And there's nothing that is like that they do wrong or hits a wrong note with me. It's just like, it's okay.
It's good enough. No, I said it before we started recording this. I said out loud, this show isn't bad enough to hate, but not good enough to remember. And I think that's exactly where Camp Candy presides in the world of cartoons.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just sort of nice. And, you know, and it's like just zany enough because, and I like that it's justified by the conceit of John Candy telling the story and kind of like making it a bit more, you know, fun for whoever he's talking to. So that's why sometimes it's like raining sprinkles or whatever crazy yeah. thing he's saying.
He's telling camp stories, and yeah. which are going to be embellished. So therefore you can get away with basically anything you want to.
Yes. And I'm sorry to keep bringing it back. I'm just still kind of heated about it. like that fucking Ronald McDonald cartoon, like, didn't justify anything. None of it made sense. Just things happened and you're supposed to go like, well, he's a fucking clown and he sells hamburgers, so that's fine. But like the show, it justifies it. It's like, look, I'm telling a story and it gets right. a little wild sometimes and that's fine. And then like the little kids are like, that didn't really happen. It's like, yeah. well, no, maybe it didn't. Like,
look, yeah. I don't want to pull back the curtain too far, but can you tell we recorded this within 24 hours of recording the Ronald McDonald Show? Can you tell? Look,
this isn't like some other podcast where the curtain is thick. It is a thick curtain.
What possible shows would do that, Robert Clark?
We just do shit whenever our children aren't kicking us in the face.
Dude, legitimately, that happens more than you'd think.
I always say that as my go-to, my child kicking me in the face, because he has kicked me in the face so many goddamn times. There's like an indentation where his foot just fits because he keeps doing it.
I meant for everyone who isn't you.
Fair.
Because I know better. This is two half episodes. Thankfully, unlike Ronald McDonald, which was 44 minutes long, this is not.
44 minute episodes?
44 yes. minutes with like a solid 21 minutes of filler.
At least, fucking... yeah. It could have easily. Anyway, listen, that's still fresh in our minds for whatever reason. listen, they say if you do something right before you go to bed, you tend to remember it better. Anyway, totally non sequitur. We open up with Beans, and you kind of get a vibe for what John Candy's character is all about in this first second. You know, show me, don't tell me, you know? And they did a great job of that here, and that he says, I'm going to open these beans. He's offered a can opener, and he says, absolutely not. This is camping. He tries to use, like, a letter opener and, like, all kinds of different mannerisms to get it open. Can't do it. Has to use the can opener at the end of the day, and then spills beans all over his face. Yeah. You know everything about that character you need to know immediately.
And like, the slapstick didn't work for me. It wasn't as artfully done as some other cartoons, you know, I've seen. But like, I get it. It makes perfect sense. And it's a great setup for the character. All of it is like, it's all mechanically, technically proficient. So like, yeah.
And it's about that. Especially because there's two stories to, you know, and so like packing in a complete cohesive story into 11 minutes is not easy.
Yeah.
And I say that as someone who just had to try to do that for a little script. But I looked up the writer of this segment.
Mm-hmm.
This guy worked on probably, like, you've probably covered tons of his shows. He did an episode of Pirates of Dark Water, which is my absolute favorite show from this era.
Yeah,
he did some Ghostbusters. He did a couple of Bill and Ted's. He did Captain N, Ninja Turtles, Super Mario Brothers Super Show. He also wrote one episode of Punky Brewster.
Wow.
Live action just for Soleil Moon Frye, huh?
Yeah.
Just live action enough for a cartoon writer.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome.
He's a seasoned pro at like, right. And like, once I saw that, I was like, oh, that's probably why it's so good. This dude knows how to crack a little animation script.
Yeah,
he knows the bits. I mean, look, initially also we learned about the irresponsible. What's the word? Is it unreliable narrator? Irresponsible narrator works too. where he has, I have a camp repair list a mile long. They're like, was it really a mile? He's like, yes, it was a literal mile. And they go, no, it wasn't. He goes, okay, it wasn't.
Okay, fine.
And then in the animation, the list shrinks from going through the entire camp
past
being short.
Past the very smart rabbits and the dancing Ents. Rare to see Ents in a cartoon.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I was that. Not.
Although, honestly, if I were to say if there were any critique I would have, it was a bit licentious for Saturday morning cartoons. Like, they were straight showing their schnoz. They were pulling the dress all the way down, all the way up over their heads. Like, that's ball ass naked. Like, you can't drink in that strip club because they are bottomless.
You can tell that if John Candy's the one telling the story, he's been out in the woods a little too long.
A little bit.
Yeah, seeing so. The trees like that.
Yeah. What is the tree equivalent of a mermaid to a sailor? the woman was born half half woman and half tree.
Dryad, I think. Right. He's seeing yeah. Dryads.
There you go.
He's just nymph. Fucking knot holes now.
I mean, we've all been in the woods.
I guess I try and get out of the woods before I want to start inseminating plant life.
Who are you lying to right now, Robert Clark Chan? Because it's not me.
That's, himself.
That's just... why it's 3 days and out. 3 days and out because he hit five, and I'm going for it.
You know, that's
I'm going to hump
point.
Some ferns.
To get really lucky, you'd be between two ferns.
I see you making a reference, but it doesn't really...
It worked.
As a joke, it doesn't fly.
It worked.
It was.
It implied a tree threesome, but it was also there. Was a reference. So I think it worked.
Are you saying you're getting DP'd by some ferns?
Okay, apparently. Everybody at home. Like, I need to know. Hashtag tree joke worked. Or hashtag sorry, Ray, this tree joke didn't fly. One of those two, you got to hit me up on Twitter at Almighty Ray, at G.I. Joe Podcast. We need to know, did the tree joke land?
Also, now that I'm thinking about it, like, if I were getting DP'd by ferns, that would mean, like, two fern dicks in my butthole, because I only have the one opening, as opposed to being, like, I guess, London Bridged by two ferns.
Yeah. They just run between trains, two ferns. Yeah, what do we do?
Yeah, right. Yeah, but that hardly counts. Like oral penetration.
That doesn't count to you?
Counts. That's not penetration. Come on now.
Okay, I mean, maybe not how you do it.
Look, God is not going to send you to hell for sucking a few dicks before you get married. Or all the dicks.
That's not why he's sending me to hell, at least. There's a bunch
I've
of new gadgets.
Mile long.
God damn it. new gadgets. We have a fishing pole where you type in the thing you want to find, but be specific. We have spring shoes. It turns out this character named Vanessa, who's like a rich snooty girl, she has a catalog called Wilderness Wonders, where she... wants to get everyone expensive, sharper image style camping gifts, including like a tent that and a canoe. What is it? A canoe that's dehydrated.
Dehydrated water.
That is a real cartoon bit. I appreciated it. The alternative is the you like pull the cord and instead of inflating, it's like an inflatable tent. That was fine too. All of it's fine.
That actually kind of exists.
Yeah.
When we were looking for tents, I was like, wait a minute, what's a pop-up tent? Is that a thing? Is it that awesome? Is it as awesome as I think it is? And we never pulled the trigger on it, so it just sat in the Amazon cart. But someday,
tent technology has come a long way since the days here of Camp Candy.
Right.
I assume a pop-up tent is just a tent that exists for a couple of weeks to sell on Grubhub, and then as soon as the health inspectors show up, disappears.
Yeah, it's actually a front for your local Sizzler. It's just under a different name.
Okay. That's a ghost tent, Ray. Totally different thing. Yeah, if it's called Pasquale's, then it's definitely find a fucking animatronic mouse in there. It's no good.
but that character, I want to say, like, she that was like a I feel like there's that kind of like stock character in a lot of like ensemble kids cartoons. There was that like rich kid with a like not quite Valley Girl accent.
Yes.
And I feel like that's kind of faded away.
I was like
this is a very familiar trope. Yeah, go
ahead. Here's what I'm going to jump into, because yes, I recognize that trope, but there's something about, I think it's in the performance, I don't think it's in the dialogue proper, but okay, like listen to this from her.
But John, you know how painting and hammering makes your allergies flare up?
Achoo! It does.
The Wilderness Wonders catalog has just what you need, John.
I think
is that accent?
I think she wants to fuck John Candy.
Oh, dear.
She's like really solicitous, and she's like, you know what you need? You need what I have. Why don't you come back to my nice place?
Oh, interesting.
My fancy ass cabin that I ordered from mail order, because it's not Amazon doesn't exist yet. Back in those days, it was mail order. But like, come back and relax. I've got a hot tub there. You know, you can just let all the worries of the day float away. can you hear it? Is it just me?
You know, I didn't hear it until you said it just now, and now I wish you hadn't.
Okay, good. Good, good, good. That's well, if I can ruin your day just a little bit, I've done my job.
Vanessa understands that John Candy has too many chores and wants to hire a robot companion to do the menial labor of the camp. This is how we get a robot revolution, but I'll move on anyway.
Yeah, they say, okay, do everything, and we're going to go on a hike to some ice cream. And it's like, oh, man.
Well, Robo Camper shows up in a big box. There's a huge, hilarious thing where John Candy, for some reason, has to get on top of the box in way of the door to pry it open because sides don't exist in John Candy's world. Meanwhile, another kid presses the on button.
He's just using him. He's using physics. He's using the maximum amount of leverage on that crowbar so he gets off the ground so that he can, you know, put his full weight on it.
It works.
But yeah, really, there is a button that will open the damn thing.
The thing I want to talk about is how we're introduced to the Robo Camper with what could only be described as
by that
early 90s rap.
Yeah. I was surprised. I was like, I didn't expect there to be a rapping robot.
I mean, it's well, what year is Camp? Is this like 92? I'm just guessing.
I think this is season two, so it's like 90, 91.
Yeah, 89 through 93, I believe was the original.
Oh, okay. Run. So this is around 19. Yeah, this is when rap became a thing for the kids. That right. All the parents got scared of and tried to outlaw because those people were doing it.
Mm.
You know, ruffians.
Mm-hmm. Thugs.
Thugs.
Urban youth.
Malcontents.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Could look like anybody, of course.
Could look like anybody.
You know, but they're the ones doing the rap music.
Mm-hmm.
And by that, of course, I mean Juggalos.
Yes.
Dangerous men out of Detroit.
See, that was a properly set up joke, and I will acknowledge that that people will be laughing, you know, non-comedians who, you know, didn't see it. They would be laughing at the turn that you use there right at the end. That's
twist.
The difference
nice.
Between a reference and a joke.
Guys, I'm taking a bow right now. This is my finest moment on Knowing Is Half the Podcast. It took me 7 years. I got a properly constructed joke out there.
Congratulations.
That already puts me in a level above every late night Fox News comedy attempt they've ever tried.
You're not a big fan of Gutfeld?
Exclamation point.
Gutfeld!
Gutfeld! I am not, for the record.
I do want to... The rapping in the Ronald McDonald cartoon was fucking terrible. This is fine. This is fine.
This
is
wait a minute. That you gotta get done. Call Robo Camper. Cause I'm the one.
I'm robotic. I'm metallic, and I'm on the run. I mean, you know,
I here's the deal. The background music to that rap was way better. The rap itself, it sounded a little bit like a 65-year-old Tennessee woman running for Republican, you know, state senator. That's all I'm trying to say.
But it's a robot, so like they're not supposed to be good.
Rap or the rap is a robot, sir.
What? No, he's not.
What?
He's a fucking, what is he's like a raccoon.
He's
something.
On a PlayStation 2. He's a robot.
PlayStation 2, he's a robot.
He's digital. He's not real, Chan.
What? I don't like what you're going. Where are you going here?
Punch. It's all in the mind.
When the robotic overlords come, I am fully going to acknowledge their sentience. And their humanity, like the episode of Star Trek where they take Data to court and try to prove that he's not
Measure
real.
Of a man. Yeah.
I'm not gonna go down like you old flesh bags.
Oh, I'm first in line to turn all the rest of the humans in. I'm gonna say right now.
Ray's a sort of a Gaius Baltar type of the podcast world.
You know, if they're sexy, yeah. No, definitely. I'll sell you out. But
can I tell you right now, the first time I saw Gaius Baltar in the new Battlestar Galactica reboot, I said to myself, finally a character I can understand.
It's me.
My God. It's not that I want to be him, but I'm like, oh yeah, I am him, huh? Ooh, that hurts, but also like, Good on you, Ron Moore, for just fucking nailing my ass.
look how good he gets it.
Yeah.
Pretty much across the board, he never, that I remember, really gets his comeuppance.
Well,
I remember,
I mean,
at least.
He is put in charge of Vichy Earth.
Yeah.
He becomes
kind
the president.
Stressful for him.
Maybe this is a lesson we should have learned about the womanizing traitor who might become president. I could be talking about anybody right now, of course.
Could be anybody.
Could be anybody.
Bill Clinton's going to run idea. Again?
There's no, I would still vote Baltar. I'll say it. At least he's honest with his corruption. Thank you. We don't know what is on. God damn it. What's her name?
I only remember Mary. Shit. No, I've forgotten her last name now. I want to say Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio. Different person entirely.
Or just naming women we can think of?
Yes, basically. Yeah.
I don't know what's on Laura Roslin's laptop, but I need to know what's in those emails. That's all I'm trying to say. Look, yeah. I would vote for a woman, just not Laura Roslin. Am I right?
Yeah. See, the great thing about our show is that a good professional show would go back and edit out the part where Ray is like, oh, what was the name of that character that I was trying to remember?
You gotta leave that in.
Yeah,
no, it's going to be great about this episode.
Humanizing part of the podcast.
Is that I'm going to take out that part, but leave this part in. That's like, what a real pro would do.
Two things. No, because you're too fucking lazy.
That might be true.
Second thing, Mary McDonald.
Mary McDonald.
I have a computer and I can just look it up on fucking IMDb.
I did a little podcast thing recently for like Rings of Power, and I was editing it, and there's a part where my co-host got a call from his wife, and he says, hang on, I'm getting a call from my wife. And I thought it was funny to leave just that part in, and then the next thing you hear is him going, I'm back. I thought that was funny, but he had one note, and he's like, next time take out the part where I say I'm getting a call from my wife. I'm like, okay. I thought it was funny, but I don't know.
Next time leave in the call. That's real pro stuff right there. Leave in the call.
The chopping up edit thing. So it's like, I like sex in my butt. And then, I edited out most of it, right? That's good enough.
Yeah, I got it. Yeah.
It's called content. Look into it.
5% of the call in there.
Thank you. I think our opinions are split on this robot rap. That's all I'm going to say. This allows
you to do it, by the way.
I was just surprised to hear it. And also, it kind of sounded like the voice actor was doing kind of a Bobcat Goldthwait edge to it.
I heard a little more what is it? Screaming Jay Hawkins. That's kind of what I heard.
Yeah. Put a spell on you.
Yeah, I guess maybe doing like the same thing with their throat that Screaming Jay and Bobcat Goldthwait both.
it's the same gimmick. You know, it is what it is. So they Camp Candy takes time off. And they do have a very uneventful trip that is very uninteresting. So they get back very quickly, like 30 seconds later, to find out everything's been replaced. The robot has gone to the phones and ordered a whole bunch of more stuff. They have now robotic buildings. Like, they weren't gone that long.
Mm-mm.
Yeah, he came back to a cyberpunk camp.
I was excited about that. I thought we could really play with the idea of cyberpunk camp back in 1990, back when cyberpunk crap was like at its apex, one could say.
Look, Blade Runner had already come out, so the possibility was open. Snow Crash had not yet really hit the mainstream, so we're not going to go that far.
But Shadowrun and cyberpunk were both a thing.
Neuromancer was definitely a thing. Yep. So Neuromancer on there. But I mean, also, he used the phone. He didn't use like a primitive internet or anything.
That was very funny that the robot still had to use the like can't pay phone to order all these things.
Oh my Christ. If he had picked up the phone and gone like, I would have given this movie 10 stars.
To be fair, we didn't see the call. They did cut away. We don't know he didn't.
I mean, if you're gonna bust out genius like that, I need to see it.
Yeah.
I can't just assume that's
you gotta leave it in. Well,
G.I. Joe will return after these messages.
Nobody beats G.I. Joe.
It's the Cobra Imp.
Cobra Imp's a tower of rocket power.
Rockets separate to lay down anti-vehicle mines.
That's why the Imp's so important to Cobra. Nobody beats G.I. Joe. The G.I. Joe Swamp Master.
There's Storm Shadow and Shockwave.
Swamp Master's ready for some Cobra chasing. Ripping through the swamp with cannon blazing. But nobody beats G.I. Joe. The real American hero.
Swamp Masher, Cobra Imp, and figure sold separately.
Joe.
Now, back to G.I. Joe.
This change has split the camp in half. Half the people want to go with John Candy and have a roughing it lifestyle. The other half are like, technology is here to serve
not
us.
Even half, two people. Like two. Yeah.
Two. That's
well,
not
I think
half.
There are only like three on the other side. So, I mean, you know, four on the other side.
I feel like there's not just these five kids, but there's also background kids who have no personalities and are just there, but not involved in the meat of the stories, and I think they all went with him.
Wow, way to play favorites, Counselor Candy. Only five kids get your attention, huh?
I mean, that look, means. If a counselor is out in the middle of goddamn woods and he takes two girls with him to rough it away from the rest of the camp, I don't think he should be a counselor.
I agree. Well, this is kind of relevant. So I'm doing the Ren Faire in Ottawa this coming weekend, which is at it's at the Bowseeker like Boy Scout camp, which is like the main camp for the SoCal area. So like they do their like huge campouts are there and stuff, and it's like maintained by them. And last year was the first time I did it, and I noticed that in the restrooms. There are some restrooms that are named Scouts only. And I was like, why is that? And then I thought for 10 more seconds and I realized why. And I was like, ooh.
No.
Yikes.
We just got our first flyer from the school about like, hey, join Boy Scouts. And my partner was like, no. I'm like, well, no. But like, I showed it to Egon and he was like, yeah, I love camping. And they're like, no. I'm like, oh, okay. Well, right. I suppose.
That's fair enough.
Probably correct.
That's all right. Just yesterday, we got our first flyer for sell candy bars for us.
We did too. I'm so excited about this. But also $9 for fucking for 9 ounces of gummy bears. Is that the appropriate price?
That seems
like a lot.
Margins must be high.
We're selling $1 a candy bar and we're asked to sell 30 candy bars. So I might just buy all 30 and say we're done.
Yes, you got fucking dollar candy bars. That's awesome.
Yeah.
We have stuff. I'm trying to figure out how to sell this thing because nobody, I mean, look, I love comedy people. They're my favorite people on earth.
They don't have money, Chan.
They're all dirt bags that have no real jobs.
There's no money in there.
And if they do, they're spending it on weed and not on fucking pretzels.
No, they're spending it on gummies, just not those gummies.
Yes. And they're also $9 for a gummy, but you get, you know, what you pay for. Yeah.
You get an experience, not just some sugar.
Yes.
I get that.
I'm concerned that I'm going to have to buy all of these things for my kid because he's like, oh, I want this one and this one. I'm like, that's not how capitalism works, kiddo.
Well, one of us is about to go to a brand new office.
Oh. Oh, and so you're just going to put all your capital on the line right there, all your political capital. Like, hey, I know you just met me. But could you buy these candy bars?
Yeah, you just said
they are the world's finest chocolate.
You set up a kiosk at the desk. You say, if you want a candy bar, take it. And then I just pay the $30.
Oh, so this is just straight up bribery. I was going to say, like, these people are just going to take the bars. They're not going to leave any money. And you
guys, do you not know how anything works? You know who's the most popular? The guy giving away full-size candy bars. Well, even a place where all the food is free.
Some of those are actually pretty good. Although, in high school, I think we didn't quite get the point because we were buying each other's candy bars because we all liked the candy. So we were just trading dollars around.
They got you. Right where they wanted you.
Yeah.
Wait, were you trading the dollars that you got from selling other candy bars?
Well, yeah, yes, because we were all selling the candy. We were just buying it from each other.
Here's your dollar.
Yeah, thank you. And I will have a caramel. Thank you.
That is how capitalism should work. Is that communism? I don't know. If it is, I'm on board. I'm on board.
Give me a hammer and sickle if it means free candy. That's all I'm going to say. Candy
bar communism. Let's do this
shit. I'm a candy bar communist. It's a brand new thing. We just invented it. All right, so we decided we kind of get rid of this robot. I don't know why. Right. It doesn't seem like anything's actually bad or wrong.
Well, one thing that I did think was funny was that there's some mild commentary on AI art because John Candy has a little arts and crafts table that no one else wants to be at, and the robot does a painting class, but the robot uses his like extendo arm to make all the kids paint the exact same thing that he did.
Mm-hmm. Wild. I was like, I like that bit.
Relevant. Camp Candy is still relevant.
I fucking love that because I hate crafts and I would love and I can't draw for shit, but I would love to be able to just like put out my arm and then have, you know, a robot like wap, 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 wap. There you go. You've got a Bob Ross original. Holy shit. That would be amazing. There is nothing that these robots do that I am not legitimately for.
That's not what I would use that technology for, but
look. Ray. I understand, because the very next thing is that they have they replaced all of the wildlife with robot animals.
Yeah, and which is
it turns into
Westworld.
Yes, which is awesome. A, B, Ray's gonna fuck those robot squirrels,
of course.
I understand that's what you want, and we have different needs here in this
look,
Camp Candy-esque Westworldscape.
I will just say, if me and Robert Clark Chan both went to Westworld and it was a real place, we would have drastically different experiences while we were there.
That's fair. That's fair.
I might not get out of the first room. That's all I'm trying to say.
When I watched the first season of Westworld, I came to the, I don't know if it's depressing or just realistic, conclusion that I would probably get caught up in actually trying to do all of the story content.
Well, that's what you're supposed to do.
Trying to get 100%.
Yeah. I gotta shoot all the pigeons. Gotta do it.
Because here's what I know about myself. I'm codependent. I've got the books on my shelf and the years of therapy to prove it. I would absolutely be going in there, putting on a white hat, and trying to save all of the robots and be the nice person, ingratiate myself to the robots. Because again, I know what fucking is happening in season 6 and 7. The robots are taking over the fucking planet, and I'm going to be on the good side.
Guys, earlier I made allusions to what I would do in Westworld, and I was honestly just trying to sound cool. The truth is, I also would try to get 100% of all the missions. I can't let this deception last any longer. I know it wasn't true when I said it, but I thought it was funny. I would absolutely be like, "Oh, the can's rolling! I gotta go get that can." I know me, and I know that's exactly what I would be doing.
If you miss the can, then the quest doesn't restart until the next day at the morning. So you have to go get the can first.
Got to make
you
sure
screw
you
up
get
the whole
that
rhythm
can.
Of the day.
Oh, you didn't get the can. Might as well go to bed.
You have to treat it kind of like Majora's Mask. There's certain events that you have to be there for. Yeah. Otherwise, you've screwed up the whole loop.
Look, as somebody who's played through all the Dead Rising games, I still feel stressed out by the timers.
I love Dead Rising. Yes.
Still gets everything done.
Just the same. I
It is.
The way that I like to play Dead Rising is I play through the story far enough to make sure that I can get around the map, and then I ignore it. And I just save people.
Because that's the second playthrough. First playthrough, you try to beat the story.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And do a couple random other things while you can, because those timers are no joke.
No.
Second time through, you try to save everybody.
Yeah.
Third time through, who knows? This is going to get weird.
Did you play 4?
I did play 4.
It got such bad reviews, but it was on like Super Sale last year, so I got it.
It's fun.
I really liked it.
It's fun. Here's the deal. It's fun. It's about one third the playtime of any other Dead Rising game.
Yeah.
And they give you power armor that breaks the entire game.
Yeah.
And it's not the best. They made some bad choices, but if you were hungry for a new Dead Rising experience, it gives you that.
And I liked that they made Frank even like, because in the first game he's kind of scummy. And then they've tried to like mythologize him a little bit later, but in this one he's like, no, he's still like a weird guy who's like dodging responsibility. And
yeah, there's a reason he's covering the zombie outbreak instead of, being with his family. There's just the choices that Frank West has made. Trust me on this. Now, here's the deal. We got to get rid of this robot.
Okay, yeah.
Got to get rid of him. We have to shock him. So John Candy tries to electrocute him, gets electrocuted himself, but it ends up spinning the robot out of control. He forms blades on his hands and starts wrecking everything. Trees, the same two trees like 3 times, the same handful of buildings 2 or 3 times. Welcome to Deke Animation. And John Candy shoots an arrow straight in the air, creating rain clouds, which then get him wet. And that's the end of him. He shorts out. They send the robot back and he's replaced with a giant Paul Bunyan balloon and one of the weirdest buttons to an episode we've ever had in the show. I didn't get it.
It like smothers you as the viewer. It's very bizarre.
I didn't get the premise. I didn't get the joke. I didn't get the reality of it. I didn't get why this is a finisher. I didn't get why you pull lights here. I didn't get any of it, but there's a Paul Bunyan and Babe the Blue Ox giant balloon that comes out of the box, crowds the screen while everybody's like, whoa. And then we fade to black. That could have been the end of it for humanity, quite honestly. Thank God there was a second episode. And that second episode is called Glasnost Menagerie.
Oh, yeah, such a good name.
Glasnost, that's a great name. That is, again, top 10 names of any episodes we've ever seen. The part that killed me is they have an exchange student coming to visit. So John Candy is appropriating their culture in an effort to make them feel welcome.
Well, I don't think he's appropriating it exactly, because he's not saying I invented the culture. He's saying we have to make the camp a little more like Vought, which is the country they made up.
Yeah, this is literally from The Boys. This is the evil corporation sponsoring Homelander. That's where she's from. I thought that was weird.
It's not appropriation. It's like when you bring home a kitten and you have like a blanket to mimic the mother. You're not appropriating cat culture. You're just making him feel comfortable in a new place.
Oh, okay. So it's like when Aquafina.
Oh, go on.
Oh, no.
Property, mm-hmm. and that's just how mm-hmm. she talks.
She's just making.
That's just how she talks.
Yeah. Making urban youth feel comfortable. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. You know what? I understand then.
How dare you? Like, you don't get to talk shit about Aquafina.
This I love Aquafina. What are we talking about?
For us Asians to handle amongst ourselves, we'll let you know what the results of the trial are.
Well, I would argue that she's it's failing because she's moving only upwards. And I also love Aquafina. I don't even know what you're talking about right now. I'm a big fan of Raya the Last Dragon and Shang-Chi, Legend of the Ten Rings. There we go. I enjoy all the things I see Aquafina in. I understand she was in a lot of stuff before I saw her in those two things, but I don't care. That's the only thing I know she was in, and I find her delightful. And that's why I say that's just how she is.
Fair enough. I'm having to use Shang-Chi to indoctrinate my child to kung fu movies. Trying to get him to watch them with me.
Just show him Rumble in the Bronx. That should be all it takes.
It's hard because kids. Okay, look, the shit that we had as kids, most of it was not that good. Every once in a while, you'd get a banger, but for the most part, like the cartoons and whatnot are, you know, like real slow. And like now, they've got 3D and you know animation, and they move real fast and lots of bells and whistles, and they got fucking YouTube videos that are just like edited all crazy time shit.
Yes.
And so they can't sit down and watch something awesome like an episode of Robotech. Mm-hmm.
and it's not going to take. We got almost through one episode of G.I. Joe because my 5-year-old was super interested in Scarlet because saw that character on my t-shirt.
Yeah,
because
she's dope as hell.
She loved it. She loved it. And then she's like, I want to watch the Scarlet show. But then you get 5 minutes into it and she's wandering off. You know, that's just that's how it works.
Mm hmm.
You know, whereas, by
contrast, I used to watch Wizard of Oz so much we had to get a second copy of it because the tape wore out, and I would watch it, and I had these like figurines that they're like little like I don't know maybe like 4-inch tall figurines that they were on little like you know circular standees of the Yellow Brick Road, and I would line them up and then put them forward in order as they would come on screen. So, there's the mayor, and I would put the mayor forward, and I would patiently wait until the next character.
Now they have fucking amiibos, man. You can just put them in your fucking game. You don't have to sit around like you're in the.
I would have loved that. Donuts. I would have pushed my parents to buy me so many. Of those when I was a kid, if that had existed.
I'm trying to like, I know I can't buy him everything, but also like, yeah, anything that I would have wanted as a kid, I find myself hard pressed to not just buy for him.
Yeah, I don't know what was with our boomer parents. They didn't, they always made me feel bad when I got something. I now live as a parent myself, only wanting my kid to have literally everything ever.
Well, there's that balance because if you do too much of that, then they turn into the skiing guy in the 80s film who has everything in the fancy car and he steals the girl.
It's just
and
not
then
enough for him.
He's going to get his comeuppance from the little piece of shit that didn't have anything growing up.
I get that, but look, I can't afford all that. But like, there's no Kinder Egg I won't buy. You know what I'm saying? Like with that guy, but with Kinder Eggs. You know, like maybe that's okay.
I got you.
Comparison.
Yeah.
Like there's limits.
Yeah.
But like,
am I gonna buy my kid the $600 Unicron that is like taller than he is? Probably not.
No.
Yeah.
But I sit back.
Does it have the voice of Orson Welles? Because maybe it's worth it.
Oh my God. Here's the thing. Well, even without it, it's fucking worth it. It is amazing.
I feel like I had to scrimp and save and beg and cry and steal to get every $5 G.I. Joe figure that I ended up getting.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, my parents would not give me a USS flag. Neither would Santa Claus, dickhead. But that said, like, you know, my kids got a Gabby's dollhouse, literally everything.
Yeah.
We found out it was a thing, and we just bought all of it.
And now my kid is jealous of your kid. So I believe that means that you are going to be the your daughter is going to grow up to be the ski asshole, and my kid is going to steal her woman? Question mark, or possibly dunk her in a vat of nacho cheese. I'm not sure which movie we're in, but trust me.
This all sounds viable, though. The more I think about it, yeah.
My kid's the protagonist in all of this.
hoping,
fingers crossed.
You know,
he's got some real ski guy tendencies, so I really want to like steer him away from that. Like,
well, that's why we call him Ski Gon.
Yeah.
Ski Gon. No, gotta cut that nickname off now before it's too late.
The key is to have a nickname that's so incomprehensible that no one uses it. Anyway, the exchange student, we get a thing with bees,
yes.
And this nurse who gets, like, I don't know, she gets stung on the face and is horrifying, or is she ugly?
No,
the bit here?
She has, like a honey fiber face mask on, and the kid's like, you look ugly. She's like, it's from my face. And then the bees come, like, they're like, whoa, you're ugly, and they turn around. But the nurse is voiced by Valerie Bromfield, who was Dan Aykroyd's comedy partner, and they started at the, you know, they were in the first company at the Toronto Second City. And a lot of Second City folks pop up on the show. And in fact,
wouldn't you know it?
The series finale, which features some actual live action bits of John Candy, is called and your host, Bobby Bittman. And it was written by Tino and Sana. So it's like the series finale is just a Second City tribute. Really.
He's great. Tino and Sana. He did the voice was like the plant villain on Darkwing Duck, I believe. Poison Ivy equivalent character.
Yes.
On the Darkwing Duck show. Dr.
Reginald Bushroot.
That's the one. But I really love Tino and Sana because he's like the most D-level celebrity. Nobody knows who this is but us, basically. But there was a David Rash movie, star of TV Sledgehammer, also a Second City man. And he made a movie called Masters of Menace, where he played a biker who was on like a house arrest, who ducked out, much like the plot of Ant-Man. He ducked out because one of his biker friends had a funeral and they had to take the body cross country.
I've never seen this.
Tino and Sana was like the second in command biker of this crew. It is a wildly forgettable movie that I don't even know how you would find at this point. The whole point of it was to have drunken biker fantasy movie with lots of boobs and a little bit of violence and motorcycles. Like it was pure.
It's on YouTube. Masters of Menace, full movie.
I can guarantee you right now, if it's on YouTube, it's not the full movie.
is it get a little bit raunchy?
Probably some sections missing. But overall, here's the deal. Go ahead and watch it. I haven't seen it since I was in like high school and I was a big Sledgehammer. I would watch anything David Rash was in. David Rash?
I don't know.
Probably
He's
Rash.
He's a very talented performer. And that's one of my regrets. Being in Hollywood this long and working around comedy, how have I not met that man? I don't know.
I have some good news. There's a DVD of it for sale. It's only $26 with $20 shipping because it's from Australia. But someone in Australia has a DVD of Masters of Menace for you.
That's who stole it.
You got to do this, Ray.
It's got James Belushi, Dan Aykroyd, John Candy, and George Wendt.
Oh, yeah.
All in very tiny roles, I promise you.
I have to see this now. I got to see this.
Yeah, it's an SCTV movie about, and I think it's nominally a comedy, but it's really just like a biker fantasy movie.
Nominally a comedy.
What if the Blues Brothers was bikers instead of guys in suits?
Mm.
It's Masters of Menace. Look, nobody's heard of this movie but me, but of course, me being me, it's right at the tip of my tongue at any minute. Anyway, the foreign exchange.
Fucking Christmas elf thing. that was the Christmas for so many years.
Yeah. Oh, I saw that thing on Twitter. I couldn't believe someone figured it out.
We did
Here's the deal. An episode of this show now is out there where we talk about that cartoon because we watched it.
Oh. Wait.
David Rash is in Succession. Are you not watching Succession?
No, I've seen one episode of Succession and I realized I hated every character and I wasn't sure I wanted to keep going.
Yeah, but David Rash is in 22.
But now that I know he's in it.
You just said you'll watch anything that he does.
Guys, you just sold me on Succession. If you said that and nothing else, I would have been like, I'm watching all 125 episodes of this bitch. I'm in. The exchange student's name is Zagalina.
Yes. Zag
Russian,
is your friend.
But it's not Russia. I like he actually goes to a map.
Yeah.
Because here's where Vought is and just sort of nominally points to seven different areas, making sure never to really point at Russia. But she's Russian. That's what we're trying to say. This is right after the Berlin Wall fell. The Cold War, as this was written, the Cold War was probably still ongoing, quite honestly.
Yeah, I think the Soviet Union hadn't quite, because, well, when it was animated, the Soviet
Union was definitely
still.
I think 91, the Soviet Union collapsed, and 89, the Berlin Wall fell. So we're not comfortable having positive Russians yet, except on, you know, that Brave show, G.I. Joe. Hello. Russians as good guys? Well, what the F?
No, but the thing is, she is a good guy in this because this is.
Well, that's the point.
Also she's like a superhero.
It's post Sting Dream of the Blue Turtles with that song Russians. So I hope the Russians love their children too. So we know they're all human just like us. So she's human just like us. She just is like a little off because she has different cultural.
Yeah. She's very poor.
And
she's
hormonal.
She's very, very poor. And is forced to live very, very poorly because she insists that not only now this is where the religious freedom argument gets lost on me. Just because you need to sleep on sticks, Zagalina, doesn't mean we all have to sleep on sticks. Now we're going to do it because that's the law now. But like that doesn't make it okay, Zagalina.
Well, I feel like
and no one else.
That was kind of the mode of treating exchange students at the time was you would do a big awkward thing where like you made a big show of doing the like two things that you knew about the exchange students culture, like you like make the whole class do them. I can't imagine it was ever that heartwarming for the exchange student, and it probably didn't teach everyone that much, but there was this mode at the time in cartoons but also in like real life of like let's welcome them by Doug does this too with the student who's from I think the fake country is called Yak Estonia. there's like an episode where it's a Yak Estonian kid named Fentruck who comes, and the dollar store Don Knotts character makes a big show of that we're gonna do a little bit of Yak Estonian culture to welcome them. And so I feel like he's like, all right, we're going to sleep like they do in Vought. We're going to sleep on sticks. And then they go in on a big hike and they lose the food. Like we're going to eat like we do in Vought. And it sounds pretty good. She's like, we eat like onions and mushrooms. Like, all right, that sounds tasty to me.
See, this is the thing. If you come from a country of extreme poverty and you get to the United States, the richest country on earth, the first thing you don't want to hear is we're all going to sleep on the sidewalk tonight.
Well, like, no, look,
I didn't come here to do that.
Well, but I think for her, it's not poverty.
Yeah, this is what they do.
No, I think it is extreme poverty, and she's just accepted
it.
She has
like superhuman strength from like sleeping outside.
Yes, because she has to kill bears for food.
Unreliable narrator. So
that's true. That's true.
Just like John Candy. And I don't want to have to keep going back to this well, but in the 80s, classic romp Better Off Dead, we have the French foreign exchange student show up, and what do they have at dinner? French bread. French dressing. French fries. So this 100% checks out.
Yeah,
that also she would be doing the opposite thing, like let me show you how we do it because I am an exchange student and that's the whole point.
Right,
I introduce you to my shit, you introduce me to your shit. And like, you know, who doesn't like sleeping on a bed of sticks?
Me. I like the indoors.
Have you tried it?
I would also
like to. There's a lot of things I haven't tried that I know I don't like.
I would like to suggest that you are a racist. Not just because you won't slip on a bed of sticks, but it's on the list of reasons.
Which is, of course,
A mile long?
Literal mile long.
I'm sorry. 2.6 kilometers long. Because, you know.
How dare you?
That's what they do in VOD. That's not right, is it? How many fucking kilometers in a mile?
I mean,
you are asking the wrong person.
2 kilometers is just over a mile.
Okay, well that's,
you know, like could be anything. Yeah. There's also she wants to go out a swim, but the lake is -40 degrees, which would be frozen. It would be frozen, even in Fahrenheit. That would be frozen.
Ah, no, if it were of a sufficient salinity, it could indeed be 40 degrees below zero. So as they're diving in, they're also getting a mouthful of salt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Although when John Candy dives in, he does instantly become a giant block of ice of John Candy.
But that was pretty funny. I thought that was good. I like that bit. We also the last one in is Chan, you got the sound poll for this?
Yes, and also one right after that we're going to have to talk about.
I also was like, what? Is that from Vought, or did she find that from a movie?
Last one in water is rotten, flicking, flacken.
Last one in is a rotten, flicking, flacken.
Which and does then... not linguistically stand up and to then the...
She calls out to Cobra Law for some reason. That was a little strange.
And then this.
Check out Shamu.
What the fuck? Did they call this a foreign exchange girl a fucking whale?
I think so.
Oh,
I mean,
they did. Now, I don't think they meant it like that, but they might have meant
I don't know how else you mean it.
How else can you use Shamu, Ray?
Well, you see, Shamu is in the ocean and can swim very, very well, being an aquatic sea creature. Uh-huh. Right? Also, Shamu is a whale commonly used to denote fat people around this time period demean them.
Yeah.
Sort of what I... also, yeah, Blackfish hadn't come out yet, so it wasn't like, oh, look, she's holding one of the kids down underwater. Oh, what a real Shamu. I would 100% be okay if that were the reference.
That would have been very funny. I think slightly too dark for Camp Candy, but very funny.
For Camp Candy, yeah. But not necessarily like Pirates of Dark Water. Totally.
Oh, dude.
To be honest, not too dark for Masters of Menace. Longo, my point I'm trying to make is, we get to a subplot now where Alex, who sucks, legitimately sucks as a human being.
Yeah.
I mean, I know I'm supposed to be on Alex's side. Yeah. She's my protagonist through this. But she is a racist. She is misogynist.
They're not
She's an all-around bad person.
They don't even make it clear. It's obviously clear, but they don't have her say out of her mouth, like, oh, I can't do that. I'm jealous of that.
Right.
She's just there being like, fuck you and everything you're doing, which is...
fucking foreign piece of shit. It's like, whoa, Alex, hey, come on.
Yeah. Jeez.
It comes off poorly.
You know, I'm here to see Alex the camper, not Ashley from Mass Effect. I don't need this kind of space racism in my Camp Candy. Thank you very much. Frankie, I was hoping you'd get it, and you did, and I'm happy about that.
So happy to have someone with your level of video game knowledge.
You understand how much I tested the waters with that one and scored? That was a 3-on-1 I went for and scored. That was incredible. I don't get to do that on this show ever. I don't get to complete breakaways on this show, less take on an entire team.
Frankie, we will have you back because
I'd love to.
I've never heard Ray so happy. He is making sort of references that the sort of literary references that I make that Gina's like, ha, 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 ha. And like, yeah, I don't read books. So he's finally getting a piece of what it's like to, be well read, I guess, or something.
Can you, Frankie, can you do me a favor? Can you just say, just for me, just humor me on this. Can you just say, hi, I'm Gina Ippolito.
Hi, I'm Gina Ippolito.
I think we got it. I think we're good. No. I think we're good going forward, honestly.
Oh, no, I would never even attempt to replace Gina.
No, that would probably
and
be
I'm
a bad
pretty sure even just saying that, like not even going through with it and like ditching Gina or anything, she's already heard that. Coming for you.
I'm a little afraid that I yes-handed the bit. I'm kind of scared about that.
Guys, in 6-7 years, when she's listening to this episode to fill out a spreadsheet, I'm going to be in deep shit. No one tell her, you listeners. Don't you dare.
She's not listening to the old ones. She's listening to the new ones. She's only gone bad a month. We only have weeks to live.
Oh, God, no. Damn it.
Well, guys, it's been nice knowing you. I'm going to go out and buy a finest suit now since it's happening. So Alex legitimately sucks. And there's a whole sequence here where they want to take a hike. There was a great bit where they say we're going to walk from Pointing Rock to Punk Rock. And then Punk Rock was a rock with a bunch of like mohawk like sticks coming out of it.
That was a fun visual gag.
I was so happy about that. We even make a Hulk Hogan reference on the show.
Yeah, yes. That's pretty wild.
That was insanity. It must have been on the same network as Rock and Wrestling.
Whoa, I'd like to see her in the wrestling ring up against Hulk Hogan.
I'd like to see her go home.
Dang.
Shut the fuck up, Alex.
Wow.
Rancid, rancid person.
But so it that was, word phrase, harsh.
Yeah, it was the Hogan and go home. Didn't quite work.
Go home again. Oh, see, that would have been
worked.
Anyway, we now have a very bizarre bit that seems out of place that they just use it for a later plot point, but she picks up a giant tree, yanks a tree, Zagu does, and then uses it as like the bridge layer from G.I. Joe. There's a bunch of ants that live under the tree who are pissed and declare war on humanity. It was a shocking moment at this point in this episode.
That's really funny. And the head ant was Douglas MacArthur.
Yes.
He had like the big pipe and stuff.
They declare war. They steal
It's either MacArthur or Patton. Those are the only two general could references.
I feel like it's just kind of both. Maybe they're just like, we'll just throw it in a big a big general stew.
I'm going with General Amalgam. they steal all the food but leave an IOU, which I thought was a very good bit. I thought that was a very good bit. I enjoyed that very much. At this point, Sam wakes up at like 5 a.m because that's when we do this with Zagu. Zagulina. Zagu's already up, so they go off together. There's a rock fall that ends up happening because Zagu is getting a little crazy. She ends up grabbing this giant boulder that's about to crush all the campers, throws it, not looking where it's going. It ends up creating a dam, which causes a gigantic, a typhoon-level flood with tidal waves about to destroy the entire camp. And I just wrote in my notes, this seems unlikely.
Well, you know, I think it's a commentary on the fragility of the ecosystem and the impact of man's interference and how you can wind up doing things like accidentally changing the course of rivers because you've extirpated all the wolves.
And bringing in foreign creatures
to
an environment changes
non-native
it.
Non-native creatures. Yep.
And that's where I learned to be xenophobic at a young age. Stop the steal.
Oh, no.
At this point, Alex and Zagu have decided to become best friends because I don't even know what changed. Alex is like, you know what? Maybe I'm just being an asshole.
No, she's
just a superpower individual.
She realizes what happened. Zagu realizes what she did. So she's trying to push another rock to stop the thing. Alex is like, we all have to band together to save the place. And then they all do. They all, I don't understand how any of these other people could have helped push the rock.
Right.
Because Zagu's clearly like orders of magnitude stronger than any of them, but they do. And she says, okay, well, now we are friends, which, man, that took her a long ass time to get to. Cause Zagu even straight up says out loud, I think Alex is not liking me. And that is, that's pretty hurtful.
Heartbreaking. Yeah.
It's rough. It's a rough moment. Well, they end up making friends and we get a bit that I kind of enjoyed, where she says to Alex, please don't call me Zagu. My best friends call me Za.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, okay, you just keep shortening your name. It's fine. I like that, I guess. And then I don't know. Is this racist that they give her blue jeans?
I think
it's a little racist.
That's one of those major cultural points that people like air quotes knew about Russian people back then in the early 90s. Like, oh, yeah, they pay like a gajillion dollars for a pair of jeans.
Well, and I think it's also it could also maybe be a subtle joke about the sort of blunt ignorance of the Americans that the gift they give her is jeans.
Well, except that she loves into them.
Well, yeah, she is into it, but it's also just kind of funny, you know, to be like, oh, they're going to give her jeans, of course.
I don't know. I can't
present you with a pair of genuine designer label American stonewashed jeans. Is folk costume?
Is folk costume?
Is it a folk costume?
That's so she yeah. sends it right back at him.
Yeah.
Oh, is this what you people wear? This is how your quaint customs. I respect that. I respect that. She knew what she was getting, and she fucking shot it right back.
But she didn't say no. I'm saying that right now.
No, because you can sell that shit. Come on.
Yeah. And then they eat. We're gonna eat American food, so they eat marshmallows. And I think to myself, no wonder we're in the state that we're in right now. Here in the United States, she's eating onions and other vegetables, and we're eating literally processed sugar.
To be fair, I'm going to go back to that line where she talks about it.
In my country, people live on wild onions and pine cones.
So, onions and pine cones.
Extreme poverty, Chan.
Yeah.
And then, of course, immediately after that, John Candy's like, yeah, but are there like fucking
are there big juicy ones?
That's a good bit. I like that. Now we have traditional Russian outfits for everyone, not just John Candy.
Right.
Well, everyone has outfits.
These are from Vought.
Yeah, Vought, which is not Russia.
No, it's a corporation. They sponsor the Seven.
Source of neo vaudeville bits throughout the episode.
And they dance around a campfire, and it is not just a little eerie, it's very eerie. And then we cut to the end. We're having fun,
and you know that's what it color. Does end with like a heart felt like written joke, which
the best part was we all learned that whether you're from Vought, Vair, Venn, or Hal, only one thing matters. Friendship. That's Vought.
Yeah. Vought, Vair, Venn, Vought. We finished that joke. Friendship, that's Vought. It's simple and it's cheesy, but also I liked it.
It's nice.
You're telling me somebody who comes from a deeply communist country didn't understand what teamwork was? I see through you, Camp Candy. I do not agree. Is all I'm trying to say.
Yeah, but you know, and so like, you know, corniness is kind of whatever. And like, yeah, I sometimes wish kids' entertainment could aim a little higher. But also,
I tell you about a show called Bluey? Can I tell you? Can Ray and I go on at length about a show called Bluey?
Please do, because I have not sat down to see it. I saw a lot of complaints. I think from you, Chan, on Facebook. I think maybe you mentioned it at some point. But what is it?
We don't have a lot of time for this, but okay. Let me just say, if you have Disney Plus, watch Bluey. There are some delightful episodes. My personal current favorite being the season 3 episode, The Unicorse.
Jesus Christ.
If it's don't make that the first episode you see.
Yeah,
if you make it like the fifth episode you see, you're going to be okay. we're doing our fifth rewatch right now of Bluey. We're up to season 1, episode 6. And each episode's about 8 minutes long, much like Camp Candy at its essence. So everyone just watch, even if you don't have kids, watch some Bluey. Get cultured.
Okay, I'll check out. But what I was trying to come around to say was, you know, as I become older and I see that the world is inundated with hollow messages about like buying stuff and just negative messages all the time, I'm fine with kids programming just trying to tell them nice, friendly things, to be nice to each other. I think that's actually great because there's so much messaging that you can't shield kids from. Like billboards to me still, like when I think about billboards objectively, it's weird that we allow huge chunks of sky and space are taken up by someone trying to sell you an app or tell you about fucking Paulie's upcoming DJ weekend at a resort in Vegas. Like, this is what society is literally elevating above everything else.
Can I tell you, that's one weird thing that I still am not used to here in Los Angeles, is there are legitimate physical billboards for acts in a different state.
Yeah.
In Las Vegas, Nevada, whatever is going on, whatever the big acts are, we get physical billboards of that. Just as we're driving down our road here in regular Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And it's an 8-hour drive away.
Look, all I'm going to say is that we got a lot of billboards in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. We're even starting. We also have like digital billboards where it's essentially a giant TV screen showing like commercials those. Along the way. But until we get to the Blade Runner future, where entire skyscrapers are just from top to bottom gigantic video screens showing like hot Asian women drinking Coca-Cola. Like, it won't go far enough for me.
Give Dubai a couple of years, Chan. Just give them a couple of years.
I mean, they probably do already have them in Dubai, but I don't give a shit about the World Cup, so I'll never be there.
Wow. Speaking of xenophobic. Suddenly I'm the least xenophobic person on the table.
I'm only gonna say that the plight of Chinese workers in Dubai
there's a lot of reasons to not go to Dubai.
You know, if you don't like it, don't sign the contract. Maybe read it first, idiots. Is that a good take? Is that
no,
a good take?
No, they like take their passports and take the contract away, and they're just sort of a slave there.
Good times, good times.
So thanks, Ray.
That's actually a bad take. What you just said. It's actually a really bad take. I probably shouldn't have that take.
No, I wouldn't.
Guys, I changed my mind. I don't have that take.
We fixed Ray. We did it.
But I'm still somehow on the side of Dubai. Don't ask me how this
Ray,
works.
No,
don't ask me.
Raising the pocket a big.
Big Dubai.
Big, what the fuck is Dubai. That? It's just real big. It's just big.
Can I tell you, I watched this documentary on YouTube about this man-made island thing they were trying to make in Dubai. Have you seen this? They had like 7 different island structures planned out to go, where they were going to sell all this multi-million dollar high-end real estate on these things called the Palms. And one was like a bunch of islands, man-made islands representing the nations of the world.
Yeah.
And they finished the Palms about 80%. Haven't finished anything else. And then they decided, oh, no one wants this. And they can't sell any of it.
I mean,
and so it's just stopped.
10,000 people live in the Palms.
Yeah. That's not a lot for how much they pumped into it.
But yeah.
Yeah, it's rough. I mean, it's bad. It's really, really bad. They have really disrupted the ecosystems
of
that entire area horribly for something that they realized about a quarter of the way in after the damage was done. We shouldn't be doing this. It's wild. It's a real testament to the hubris of mankind.
It's almost as if you give a human being too much goddamn money, they're only going to make bad choices.
Yeah.
Like leaving their phone on during the recording of a podcast.
Look, I
I'm
got a lot
call
of...
from my wife. I'll be right back.
I like sex in my butt.
You know, you say that, Chan. I'd like to put it to the test. Give me all the money and let's find out how really terrible I get. Because I bet I could get pretty bad.
I bet you could too. I don't think anybody's betting against that.
You know what? I want to prove the world wrong. I think I could be terrible.
Anyway, that was the end of the cartoon. And you can find us online at Twitter or something.
I'm talking major human rights violations I'm talking arrests. Major jail time for everyone. Ray, not me. I'm rich.
Ray. Some dumbass vampire thing that you can listen to.
Vampire
thing.
You know how many people I could pay to listen to Reclaimed Detroit, a Vampire the Masquerade audio drama? Sound everywhere you podcast and also at VampireDetroit.com or Vampire Detroit on Twitter. Do you know how many people I could pay to do that if I had all the money? There would be human rights violations. There'd be that many people listening.
While Ray continues the bit, Frankie, why don't you tell us where people can find you online?
Well, you can find me online mainly through Wizworld Live. I'm on Twitter, Instagram. Twitch is where the show happens. There's a website with a shop with a little bit of merch. You can find us at Ren Fairs all across California. Hopefully someday across the country. We just need enough juice to be able to get flown out places. Who knows? But Wizworld Live, the live broadcast Fridays, 8 Pacific. And we're going to be taping new episodes of the podcast version, which, because I'm insane, are totally different interviews from the stream. So it's way more work for no reason. It's brilliant to make more work for myself. But we'd love to have you guys on as characters if you wanted to sometime.
Totally. Talking about some dark Poe twisted Stephen King stuff.
We gave Ray enough time to write some more bits.
Yeah.
I mean, if you gave me all the money, the world would never recover. But I'm willing to put that to the test.
At G.I. Joe Podcast is where we are on Twitter. I'm at 999 RPMs.
I'm in every nightmare you would have going forward, because all our lives except mine would be terrible.
Ray's at Almighty Ray. Gina's at Gina Ippy. She'll be back. I hope so. Because he doesn't get this out of control when Gina's here. Because everyone is afraid of her.
Are we done?
Hi, I'm Kevin Goatee.
Hey, I'm Kevin Israel.
We host Gutting the Sacred Cow, the best and most unique movie debate podcast out there. Why?
Because we invite our guests to pick a film that they find overrated or hate and try to convince us to see their argument.
They must pick a film that is a financial success, widely beloved, or critically acclaimed.
That's right. Some of the films our guests have tried to eviscerate, Raiders of the Lost Ark, Pulp Fiction, Ghostbusters? You can find us on all podcast platforms like Apple, Google, Spotify, and more. And if you want to watch our smiling faces, we're also on YouTube.
GuttingTheSacredCow.com is where you find all of our information. And we look forward to our guests infuriating you when they attack your favorite films.